How many of you received a Christmas present that made you think, yes, I've always wanted one of those? Hands up, how many received a really good Christmas present? Only nine. Gosh, you've got bad friends. How many of you received a Christmas present where you thought, okay. Yeah, thank you, I guess.
Anyone in that category?
Yes. more than got the good one. Gift giving is one of the things that we're very much on about at this time of the year, isn't it? A lot of people do their gift giving at Christmas, perhaps Christmas Eve, perhaps on Christmas Day. In some traditions, particularly in the Orthodox tradition, the gift giving happens today on the Feast of the Epiphany. And so the giving of gifts is one of the things that is appropriate to talk about on the Feast of the Epiphany. And you can see where it comes from in the bit of the story we haven't actually heard yet, where we get the three wise men, the three magi, the three call them what you will, who come to Jesus and bring their gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Historically, of course, interpreted to mean, you know, gold, earthly riches, the kingship of Christ and so on, myrrh, the divinity of the one who is receiving the gift, and then myrrh, which presages Christ's death. Myrrh is the uncomfortable gift, thank you very much, but I'm not sure I really want that present. And you can imagine Mary just kind of storing it over there. Maybe we can think of someone else to give it to next year. Not that anyone here would ever pass on a present. The giving and receiving of gifts, though, is something that doesn't just happen at Christmas. We do it at other times of the year as well. We do it on birthdays. And actually, we do it really as part of the ritual of the church on a regular basis. We're doing it with this candle tonight, aren't we? We're passing on a gift. At the greeting of peace, we pass the gift of peace within that greeting. And there is a reciprocity around that, a giving and a receiving. Every giving requires reception. And more often than not, there is some degree of reciprocity. One gift received will elicit another gift that is received, and the cycle goes on. Historically, Christians have been very good at giving, haven't we? We're really good at charitable good works. We're really good at giving of our resources. And we're also really good at giving of the spiritual wealth that has been entrusted to us. A good word for that gift giving is evangelism. We give the gift of the gospel, the gift that has been entrusted to us. Paul talks about this himself. The treasure that has been entrusted to him is the one that he passes on. And so we too, thousands of years later, pass on this gift in the hope that it will be well received. Interestingly, in the ecumenical world over the last 20 or 30 years, the idea of gift giving and gift receiving has been given a kind of new lease of life. Historically, for the last sort of, 100, 120 years, ecumenism has generally been carried out through dialogue. I will bring my things to the table and you will bring your things to the table and we'll talk about them and we'll come to some sort of mutual decision and we'll work out who each other is a bit and it'll all be nice. And that kind of ecumenism, it was felt in the late 20th century, had pretty much run its course. Not completely. The conversations are still there to happen, but pretty much it was dying. And if you looked at those involved in the ecumenical world in the late 1990s, for example, there was a very large amount of grey and white hair and very little else. I remember being involved with the Victorian Council of Churches in that period, and and looking around the room and realising that in a group of about 150 people at a national conference, I was one of, I think, only three at that point under the age of 40. There was an awareness that there is a problem. And into that problem landed a gift. And the gift is a movement that became known as receptive ecumenism. The idea that involved not so much dialogue as the giving and receiving of gifts. But not in the sense of, you know, I bring along my present and give it to you and you say thank you very much. But more in the sense of you look at me and see something that I have that would be really valuable to you and ask, could you share that with me? And there's a chap called Paul Murray from the UK who's the great champion of this, who came out to Australia in that period and wowed a number of us with this idea of receptive ecumenism. And like most ideas, it's had a little bubble time and it's probably on its way down now. But for a time, this idea of receiving the gifts that we can offer one another within the ecumenical world had a lot going for it. It was interesting being involved in those conversations. I remember being involved in one such conversation where a Roman Catholic in the conversation said, because we're all, you know, we have to role play. People love to role play at conferences. And we had to role play, what gift would you ask for from the person you were with? And I was with a Roman Catholic who said, well, for the Catholic Church, we think that you Anglicans could teach us a lot about sinners. The Anglicans in the room get the joke. And it wasn't me, it was someone else just leant across the table and said, are you sure? But the point is, we can look at our fellow Christian communities and see something that has actually, we look at it from outside, perhaps when we're coming to an occasion like this, if you're an Anglican or if you're a Roman Catholic, and think, I really liked the way they did X or Y or Z. I wonder if they would show me how to do that for my community. And that can be in terms of worship, or that can be in terms of polity, or that can be in terms of the way in which we do all manner of things. So there's a lot of energy, I think, in this idea of receptive ecumenism. It'll be interesting to see whether in 50 or 60 years' time, it too has completely run its course. And we find ourselves in the ecumenical conversation looking for another paradigm. I suspect it might not even last that long, but such is the world we live in. But I was thinking about this idea of receptive ecumenism within the concept of gift-giving at Epiphany, and I wondered whether actually, you know, this idea might have legs, and it might have legs beyond just the little church bubble that we all live in, even beyond the ecumenical church bubble that we all live in. Because what does it look like if you apply the principles of receptive ecumenism to the way in which the church interacts with the world? Traditionally, we have been very good at giving gifts to the world, largely because we in the church generally think we know what the world needs. We have the answers. Well, we do. We have Jesus. We have the answers. And if only the world would recognise the value of what is being offered to them. Yet, more than one person has pointed out with some justification that there is a degree of arrogance in that attitude. Because it rather suggests that we have everything to offer to the world, but the world has nothing to offer to us. And yet, of course, nothing could be further from the truth. What does it look like, I wonder, to apply the principles of receptive ecumenism to church-world relations? What does it look like? I think we've had a few interesting tentative examples emerging within Australian society over the past decade or so. And the thing is, they've not been the gold examples, and they've not even been the frankincense examples, they've been the myrrh examples. They've been the uncomfortable gifts that we actually need to ask for, because the world does them better than we do. Think about the Royal Commission into institutionalized child sexual abuse. How much do we within the institutional churches have to learn from organisations outside us? So often the response of church hierarchies to the work of the Royal Commission, and perhaps particularly in the period prior, when dealing with issues of abuse, has been denial, or has been rejection, or has been obfuscation, or has been an attempt to control, instead of saying, you have some systems over there that we could really benefit from. Could you share them with us? Could you share them with us? What would it look like for the church wholeheartedly, not grudgingly, wholeheartedly, to receive the report of the Royal Commission? That's a really good, receptive question. What does it look like for the church wholeheartedly to receive other difficult messages as well? I think within all of the denominations represented around this table, each of our denominations is struggling over issues of human sexuality, to the point where we're tearing ourselves apart, let alone tearing ourselves apart denomination to denomination. And yet how much do we have to learn by looking outside the church to ask how those within other parts of society have chosen to deal with these difficult conversations, and in fact to provide a way forward that is healthy, and a way forward that is life-giving, and a way forward that is making for wholeness. A year or so ago, I was privileged to attend the launch of a report into the way in which churches had been involved in conversion therapy. The idea that you could somehow make a gay person straight through therapy. One of the take-homes, I'll spare you the details, but one of the take-homes from that was that every single person who had been interviewed as part of that process had been damaged. Every single person who had taken part in the interview process had been damaged to the point where they had considered taking their own life. A life and death situation. And yet, we in the church have conversations around whether it's not all right to be gay, and whether or not gay people can hold positions of leadership, and whether or not gay people can be married. What might the churches have to learn by reading reports like that and taking them to heart? Those are just two issues, but we could go on. What would it look like in terms of the way we manage finances? What would it look like in terms of the way we do charity? On and on. So much in our society has, or so many parts of our society have so much to offer us. Do we, as the churches, have the humility to ask them for help? What would that kind of gift giving look like? I was involved in a conversation after that launch where, having apologised on behalf of the Anglican Church for the things that had been done, I found myself asking, you know, how could this possibly, is there any way still that this can be a two-way street? We have so much to learn from what you, I was talking to one of the victims, what you have shared with us. Is there anything still that we can share with you? And she said, yes, there is. You can share Jesus. Because actually, I think Jesus would have understood. Do you see? If we open our hearts to what God is saying, through the society that surrounds us, then the opportunity may come for us to be able to speak Jesus into a difficult conversation, into a difficult circumstance. Because it may be, and that's what happened in this conversation, that we get asked to. Why? Because they have seen within us the openness to receiving the gift that is on offer. The giving and receiving of gifts, even uncomfortable ones, even the myrrh, even the stuff that leads to death, even the stuff that marks out the grave. But as Christians, we know that the myrrh, which indicates the death, is the necessary precursor for what comes next, which is resurrection. New life comes as a result of opening ourselves to this sort of gift giving and receiving, to asking for help, to receiving that which is uncomfortable, in order that even as it looks as though things, for example, within ecumenism, are dying away, we who believe in the resurrection know that there is yet more to come, if only we will open our eyes and see.